Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Trigger Talk on February 12th. It is Super Bowl weekend, and I would imagine that somewhere, I don't know, has the Super Bowl coverage started yet, Derek? They start pretty early.
Yeah, NBC will start their coverage at noon tomorrow.
Okay. I think that they've actually get a kick. Somebody, I was watching the news and somebody said, well, the coverage is going to start like this last Monday at 6 o'clock in the morning. It's all Super Bowl all the time. And actually, it's been kind of fun watching the local news talk about Matthew Stafford and stuff. I enjoyed watching the Hall of Fame and the MVP things the other night when they and I got to say, so sure sounded like, did Aaron Rodgers announce retirement yet, or is he still kind of hanging on?
He's still kind of up in limbo right now as to what he's going to do. He could come back with the Green Bay Packers, but it sounds like he really wants to play for another team, possibly because the Packers are going to be so far over the salary cap, and he doesn't want to go through a rebuild.
He could come and be a Lions quarterback for the last part of his career. Wouldn't that be funny?
That certainly would be interesting to play for an NFC North rival.
Yep. So I did watch, the Walter Payton Award. Did you happen to see that?
No, I didn't watch the NFL Honors Program. Oh. I was watching the Winter Olympics.
Oh, I've been watching a lot of Olympics, too. So it's kind of fun watching the snowboarding. I was watching, the guy from Iron River. What's his name? Nick Bumgardner?
Yeah, I heard he won gold medal in the mixed doubles snowboard cross last night.
Yes, he did. He and the woman,
Lindsay Jacobellis.
Yeah, Jacobellis. They're like the two oldest people out there, and they got gold. So that was great.
Yeah, that was fantastic. I really enjoyed being able to watch the replay of it. I wasn't able to watch it live, but Lindsay Jacobellis, she's won two golds these Winter Olympics, and it certainly is a redemption story for her. Because in her first Olympics back in 2006, she was hot-dogging in her race, and she could have easily won the gold medal, but she ended up getting a silver, and now 16 years later, she finally gets a gold medal.
Yep. Good stories all. and I was watching the MVP thing about, the honors program, and it was about the guy that, the Walter Payton Award, which is for the player that does the most things for the community, humanitarianism and stuff like that. Well, it was a guy named Whitlock, from the Rams, and he's a great big, probably a lineman or something like that. I wasn't paying attention to that part, but I watched his story, and he was talking about how when he was at Cincinnati, actually, a young player, he was always helping the community meeting with people. And when they played, was it against the Lions? They said at one point this guy comes out at the end of the game to talk to him, and he goes, have I been playing so long that this is somebody's coach's son or something like this? Turns out it was a player for the Lions who was a young kid when Whitlock came and talked to him in his community, and it made a big difference, and he just wanted him to know that he made it to the NFL, which was pretty cool. I mean, it was a very touching scene. If you can watch his Whitlock's acceptance speech for the Walter Payton Award, look that up and see. It was very good, Derek. You'll like that. So anyway, here we are on all sports talk. No, it's not sports talk. It's not Super Bowl talk or anything like that. We're going to talk about guns today. First, I'll mention our gun shows that we've got to go to, the Hale Gun and Knife Show in Hale, Michigan. Today is a year-on gun collector show here at the Washtenaw County Farm Council grounds. And then the Monroe Gun and Knife Show down at the First Merchants Bank Expo Center, which I think is actually just a rename on Custer Road, I think. It's the what they call the building where they have it down at the Monroe Fairgrounds. So, interestingly enough, it's the same show. When I went up last week to the show in Mason, I told you I would go up there, and I did. And I enjoyed. I took a nice drive up, walked around. Let's see. The only this sounds about right for me. The only thing I bought at the gun show was a box of Girl Scout cookies on the way out. they, you know how the Girl Scouts set up, and they know we like cookies, okay? So I was able to get a box, well, two boxes of cookies, and then I mixed and matched, and I stopped off and gave them to my grandkids. So let's see. Miami Town in Ohio, we got the Miami Town Gun and Knife Show, the Yankee Lady Gun and Knife Show, the Medina Gun Show, and the Lake County Gun Show in Painesville. Missouri's got a few. They've got the Xander three-day show in Fayetteville, Arkansas, which is right on the border. There's, let's see, the Knights of Columbus in Troy, Missouri, the Boonville Gun Show in Boonville, Missouri, and the West Plains Gun Show at West Plains, Missouri, at the West Plains Civic Center. And New York doesn't have any this week. So our numbers for CPL are the same as last week, 771,519. And I'd like to mention that while I was up at the gun show, this is interesting. I'm going to reach out to this guy. And I heard him yesterday on Steve Gruber's show. I was up early yesterday going to a breakfast, a retiree breakfast. I'll talk about that because it extended while we were talking about, guess what, guns. So I met a guy up there, signed a petition for a guy named Kevin Rinke, who was running for governor. He was at the gun show. He was talking to people at the gun show about his Second Amendment position. And his official Second Amendment position is, Kevin is a fearless defender of the Second Amendment and strong supporter of constitutional carry. He knows that it's our constitutional right to bear arms. And as governor, Kevin will be a fierce defender of those freedoms from the assault of radical progressives. Very true. Just like Jim Craig would also probably be a good defender because he was big. He was big into people having a gun for self-defense in Detroit when he was chief of police. So I want to say I might reach out to him and see if I can get him on the show and have him talk to our crowd here about, because that's why he goes to gun shows, because he knows that the things that we worry about. And we can't help but worry about it when, like Michigan, there's all sorts of people out there pushing more red flag laws because, you know, Oxford High School and everything. Well, tell me something with Oxford High School. And by the way, now they've gone through the charade where the guy claims not guilty, and then the parents went off. It's like, how many red flags? By the way, how many, I mean, literal red flags were there with that guy in Oxford at the Oxford High School? And he slipped right through all those red flags, kind of like the guys doing the downhill slaloms, going around the flags and stuff like that. That's exactly what he did, and then did that school shooting. How many laws can you put in place that would have said to the school personnel, you know, this guy's a problem, you really need to do something, but they didn't. The parents, they should not have, I mean, you know your own kid and you know the problems that they're having, and you don't make a gun available unlocked and unsecured for a kid, a 15, 16-year-old kid with problems, okay? So what law are you going to put? You're going to put a law that says, oh, if you do that and the guy gets the gun, then you could go to jail. Okay. Well, it should have been a deterrent enough that as the parent that you don't want your child doing those things. Okay. But no, we got to make another law. Okay. Well, I want to say, that's one of the things that, I read an interesting article this week, but it goes into the fact that it was a poll of average Americans, okay, and the poll finds that most Americans want the current gun laws enforced, not new ones, okay? We have got, you know, I think they've estimated, when you count all the ones in the various states and stuff, the current gun laws, there's like 20,000 gun laws on the books around the United States. And that includes all the little municipal ones that people think that, oh, well, we're, you know, let's pick a town, Pittsburgh. And we know better than what the state of Pennsylvania wants, and we want to do our own laws right here. So when you drive across the border into Pittsburgh, you can't have a gun, okay? Well, the state says you can. Okay, so how do I know that Pittsburgh or Hershey or Lancaster or any of the other towns in there have or don't have? You got a little book that tells you. I mean, what about driving through Ypsilanti and Ann Arbor, and then you go to Dexter, and then you go to Chelsea and Grass Lake, and can each little town decide whether they want to have guns or not? No, it's the state's business to do it, and then they have a thing called preemption. There are preemption laws that prevent states the overriding of a state law by a municipality, a township, something like that. So the thing is that everybody, and by the way, it's always at election time, as you're coming up to the midterms and stuff like that, you'll start hearing all the people talking about, I want more red flag laws. I want, we got to have, we'll get into this today, like California's trying to do with credit cards and stuff. Little laws like this that are tied to guns that they can't do, okay? So most people, when it goes through it, 64% of American adults believe the country needs stricter enforcement of existing gun laws, okay? This was a poll of American adults, and it was conducted just January 30th and 31st, just, you know, a couple of weeks ago. So this is current feelings, okay? And this is because of take a look. There's 20 million guns being sold a year. 8 to 15 of them are, 15 million of them are for first-time gun owners that are fed up and concerned about their own safety and things like that. Times are changing. And so this is saying that 54% of adults specifically support enforcement of existing laws as a solution to gun violence. Only 26% supported passing more laws. Those are the ones with the D after their names, okay? While the response was broken down by party affiliation, 63% of Democrats support the passage of more gun laws, while only 25% of Republicans do. By the way, what the hell is wrong with you 25% of Republicans out there that you want more new gun laws? You're either virtue signaling or you're buying into the BS, okay? 69% of Republicans, 28% of Democrats, and 53% of unaffiliated independents say the country doesn't need stricter gun laws. So what it means is Americans are not interested in still more gun control, okay? And I got to say, it is pretty amazing that, you know, we just need one more gun law. That we'll get it right. Just like, what is it they say about communism? Every place they've tried communism, they haven't done it right yet. We're going to do it right this time, okay? Let's see. Speaking of people trying to put laws and stuff into place, this is what I was going to say about the credit card thing in Los Angeles. The Los Angeles DA is asking credit card companies to stop paying for 80% lowers, okay? like, you know what I'm saying, 80% finished guns. And of course, they call them the ghost guns, which, by the way, it is totally legal for you to manufacture your own firearm for your own purposes, okay? You cannot build them and sell them, because then you're a gun manufacturer. You cannot build them and give them away, because then it's out of your use, okay? It's somebody else's use at that point. But it is legal, according to the ATF, according to everything, that it is legal for you to have and manufacture your own firearm for your own use. Now, they call them ghost guns because they don't have a serial number on it. Well, a ghost gun may indeed be, gosh, what about all those ones in the hood where the guys are filing the serial numbers off of them? Yeah, that could be a ghost gun, okay? But the ones here, like the 80% lowers and stuff, now, surely there are some people out there that are abusing this, okay? But to ask a credit card company to screen all the purchases of your customers. By the way, you ask, call up Visa, go, hey, I don't want you to pay for 80% lowers anymore. They'll go, what? What's an 80% lower? Okay, nobody knows what they are. Okay, we know, but most people don't know what they are. That's why they got to call them ghost guns, okay? Well, the thing is that they're trying to, again, virtue signal. Oh, we're going to stop this. We're going to stop different things from happening, because if we could just make ghost guns illegal. Well, ghost guns are, I don't even know, the percentage is so small, it probably doesn't even count on how they are used in violent crime, how they are used in robberies, things like that. So it's just somebody claiming, and we'll talk about this like with gun buybacks and stuff, where people are just saying things to get elected, okay? Well, this one here, the DA, George Gascon, who nobody likes, apparently he's the George Soros put in place DA down there. He talks about getting them off, and we've got to have American Express and MasterCard and Visa. They have the ability to go beyond what any law enforcement agency can do and can accomplish, okay? Because they can, you know, look up the company and find out, oh, nope, that one's a non-registered. That's a ghost gun component. You can't buy that. What are they going to do to staff, or I suppose the computer program? Just if it says guns in it, just no, just absolutely nix that. No, didn't we have this discussion about the choking off the companies from credit and stuff? Well, this is the same kind of thing. If you are most of the transactions that take place on the internet, and even nowadays, I get a kick. Don't you guys maybe showing my age here? But my son, he'll do something, and I'll pick up something for him, and he'll go, "How much do I owe you?" Okay, and I'll go, most of the time, it's don't worry about it. Okay, but if it's something significant, I might go, $30 or, you know, $45 or something like that. You know what he does? He gets out the phone and he Venmos it to my wife, because I don't do Venmo. Okay, I don't do that. Derek, do you do Venmo?
No, I haven't even heard of it.
Okay. It's one of the programs where you can send money back and forth on the phone to somebody, and boom, it dings and shows up in your... I don't want that. I want the greens, okay? I want the dollar bills, okay? Or I don't want anything. But don't send it to... Especially don't send it to my wife, okay? Send it to me if you were going to send it. But I don't do Venmo. So the point is that they're trying to get these companies to enforce these laws, okay? And they're not laws. They're wants, they're desires, they're political points of view. And they're trying to get, you know, as the DA of California here in Los Angeles County, I don't want you guys to be paying for do-it-yourself firearms kits. Well, are they illegal? Well, no, okay. is there a law that prohibits us from, you know, sending them across state lines or something? No. Is there any reason that we literally cannot, you know, collect the money or pay the money out to the vendor? No. Okay. Well, then stop it. Okay. But they tried to do it with choking off capital requirements from major lenders for gun companies and things like that. Remember, was it not Barrett, McMillan, one of the big, you know, handmade 50 caliber gun manufacturers? They came along and they said, we're going to cut off your credit. You know, well, wait a minute, I'm buying new machinery and I pay my bills. We're going to cut it up. Well, that was when Obama was pushing the Operation Chokehold or whatever it was called. And that actually got ruled in the courts and they were told, stop it. Okay. But they're going to try and find other ways to do it. Let me see here. I have got a few more things to talk about. One of the things, I'll put a question out. I was reading an article. This just caught my eye because I like revolvers. And this guy wrote an article. It's called My Dream Gun. And he's talking about, he found a Smith & Wesson 686-3, a snub nose, in 357 Magnum and bought it. And he talked about all the reasons he liked it and how much, you know, he likes the sights. He likes the way it looks and feels. He likes the fact that it's got a trigger hammer has the firing pin on it. You know, it's just, and by the way, the ones that don't have the lock on it have a much smoother pull and stuff. So it's an older one, like a 1988. And he talks about, you know, my dream gun. Well, I want to say, how many of you guys or gals, have a dream gun? Okay. Oh man, if I could just get this, okay. I want to say it could be a current one. I was talking to one of the people at the club the other day who is working on our Women on Target project, and she was going, oh, I'm looking for a Ruger Mark IV Target. And I go, oh, I've got one of those, you know, but she found one finally online. But she really wanted it. She, you know, it's the new one. It's got the takedown button on it and stuff. It's much, much easier. But it's a really desirable shooting gun. And it was her dream gun at that point. Now, she's only been shooting for a couple of 6 months or a year maybe. But the point is, and she's got a, what has she got? One of those CZ... the little pistol carbine, because she was shooting pistol carbine bowling pin matches. I saw her at the, what's it called? Darn it, I'll have to remember the name of the gun. Scorpio or something like that. But at any rate, you know, so her dream gun is changing because she just acquired it. Now she's going to have a new dream gun, okay? What about you guys? That's why I got a 586, because I like and mine's a 4-inch barrel, which I think is a very nice size. The 2.5-inch barrel is like the exact same size as a Glock 19 then. And you got and nowadays if you get a 686 plus, you can get a 7-round version. Now that's half of what a 19 will carry, but still, it's a very formidable firearm. And I don't know. What about you? Are you an AR person? I was going to talk to you, and I will in the next segment, about I was at a breakfast yesterday with some Ford retirees, and one of the guys is retiring, buying an Airstream, going to pull it throughout the country and stuff, and he felt like he needed to have a firearm, and he started talking about what's it going to take to what should I have in terms of a firearm for when I'm traveling, pulling this Airstream, staying in campers? What if I want to go across to Illinois? Or what if I want to go visit my son in California? What am I going to do? How about Canada? a whole lot of questions. It turned into an extra hour after breakfast talking. We'll talk about that in a bit. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600 and 92.7 FM. Be back in a minute.
Wham Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
And we're back. And yesterday I was at a, and that's how I happened to hear Gruber in the morning, because normally I'm not listening to the radio that early. And I forget when it was, whether it was on the way in or on the way out. But we had a breakfast, and there were six of us there, I suppose. Bunch of Ford retirees and or wannabe retirees. I think one of the guys was still working. So that's why we meet at 7 o'clock up in Northville at Joe's Coney Island. I mean, because he has to go to work. The rest of us are kind of like, geez, couldn't we do this at 8 o'clock instead of 7 o'clock, or maybe even 8:30? That'd be fine. But at any rate, so I'm up early and out the door and up there to, because driving 45 minutes for, I had French toast yesterday, but still, that's a long way to drive in the morning for coffee and an egg. But at any rate, we had fun talking. And this one guy is a guy that I had worked with for several years at the end of my career. And he finally retired this year. I retired in December of 18, so 3.5 years ago, 3.25 years ago, and he just retired this year. And he, like a lot of people, you change your mind on what you're going to do. So he had never talked about having an RV before, but he's having a Airstream built. And he's got his new truck ordered and to pull it, and he's planning on going around the country. And then, of course, now he over the years, he has had, I think he's got a couple of guns. He's got a shotgun and a rifle or something like that, maybe two shotguns and a rifle. But he doesn't hunt. He accumulated them over the years, okay? And he's familiar with them, but he's not proficient with them. But he was thinking about how he would feel better when he's out driving around and stuff if he's able to have a firearm and in a campground and maybe up in the woods somewhere and for protection against predators, either four-legged or two-legged, okay? So we talked about what is he interested in. Now, here's the problem. I get a kick. Here's a guy with more money than knowledge at this point. And so he's sitting there, and he's picking all these guns. You know, well, I'm looking at this this Beretta shotgun, maybe, or a Benelli, and I'm looking at, and he mentions an FN 509 and different guns, because he researches things on the internet. Okay, and then he finds a gun shop or something that's selling I think I wanted to get that because it comes with all these extra accessories with it and stuff. And I said, well, wait a minute, you don't need those accessories to start out with. And would you buy that gun without those accessories, or why are they bundling it all together? Maybe they're coming out with a new model and they're trying to offload the old one. That's okay. It doesn't make the old one any less viable, but do you really need all of those things? And, I want to say it's accessories like one of them has an off-brand, kind of like an off-brand optic with it and a red dot on a pistol. And it's got, extra mags. That's always good to have. But it had things like hard plastic holsters and extra mag carriers and stuff. I said, you may or may not even like the ones that they give you, and it just be, oh, and it comes with this really neat locking hard case. I said, yeah, but that's fine if you're storing it in the car and you're locking it or something, but only if you're driving it. You don't want to leave it because people will just take it, okay? A locking case is just a locking briefcase or something like that, and then they'll take it away. They know something valuable's in it. They'll take it away, and they'll break it open later or cut it open later because they're all they're plastic, okay? And they've got, you know, places for locks on them, but it doesn't take much of a bolt cutter to just cut away around the plastic where it goes through the holes, okay? So at any rate, you've got to start thinking about when you're, you know, when you're looking at a firearm, first of all, what do you want to do with it? And then don't be razzle-dazzled into a deal on something because, oh my gosh, it comes with a scope and a weapons light and a blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but they may not be a good quality one. They may be something they may be okay, but maybe it's not worth, instead of spending $500 on the gun, okay, they got this neat bundle that makes it $9.99 and you get all this. You could have bought that all separately on another brand, okay? So we went through that discussion, but we talked about home defense shotguns. And then he's immediately looking them all up, and he's, because I've been talking to him for a couple of weeks, then he's got all these fancy ones. Oh, well, this one's got a folding stock, and it's got that blah, 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 and all this, you know. And I'm going to say, you know, you need to take a breath and back up a little bit, and let's talk about a home defense shotgun's an outstanding idea, a nice, simple pump shotgun that is short and has a open cylinder and has a increased capacity over a hunting type of gun. Maybe it holds 5 to 7 rounds in a tube that goes the full length of the barrel. I said there are ones that are very, very short, like the Mossberg Shockwave and the Remington Tech 13 and stuff like that. Those don't even have a stock on them. They've got like a little bone handle that sticks out that you use. That can be okay, but then you're holding it in a different manner. And if you're going to try to have it be something for your wife to use as well, that may not be enough for her to hold on to. So we went through all that discussion. We talked about by the way, the whole issue of traveling state to state. And I talked to him, first of all, would you want to get a pistol? Okay, yes, you do. Do you want to get a CPL? And with the pistol, he's like, oh, yeah, then this one here, this one comes with a suppressor and blah, blah, blah. And I'm going, whoa, 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 slow down, because you're not going to keep it with the suppressor. Well, yeah, but it's quieter that way. And if my wife wants to shoot it, I'm going, well, wait a minute. Let's back up to the basics, okay? We talked about a home defense shotgun. By the way, when you're traveling with that, most states, when you're driving through a state, even with a Airstream on the back that's clearly a trailer, it is still considered part of the vehicle. So while you're driving it, you have to treat it like a vehicle. And that means that the firearm would need to be stored. It can't just be loaded and in the drawer or something like that. It would have to be unloaded, stored in a container that is meant for storing guns. Some states require them to be locked, ammunition stored in a separate place. So you got to think about that. And then the other thing is, what are you going to do when you're at the campground and stuff? That's okay. At nighttime, you can have it, you know, in the corner next to the bed or whatever you want to do. But you're not going to be in your trailer the whole time. You're going to go out swimming. You're going to do things. So how are you going to store that shotgun in a locking container or a locking rack or something like that, that it's safe from somebody, you know, rummaging through your stuff? So a lot of things to think about, but we also talked about the whole CPL thing. And I got him on the phone. We pulled up the reciprocity chart on Michigan Coalition of Responsible Gun Owners. And he understood then better about what states honor your CPL, which states don't. What are you going to have to do when you drive through Illinois or Maryland or going to California? You want to visit your son out in California? You can't take everything with you. By the way, you technically, if you're going to a place where you can own the firearm legally, you can transport it there. That's the protection of the Firearms Protection Act on legally transporting them around the country. You can stop in Illinois and take your firearm off, put it in a box in the trunk, lock it, store the ammunition separately, drive through Illinois and get out and put it back on again, okay? But you got to handle, you got to follow the laws of the state that you're in when you when you're driving, okay? So, and that could be some laws. I want to say some states allow you to carry a firearm if you're going into, oh, let's say like a place that serves, makes more than 50% of their money in food sales. So what happens is you're driving along and you want to stop at TGI Fridays and you could still carry your firearm in there. Now you can't have they sell beer there, but and that's okay. But you really should not have any because you cannot have the blood alcohol content requirements are so low for somebody who is carrying a firearm that you couldn't even probably have a beer. Okay, and a lot of places specifically say you can't drink and carry a firearm. Okay, so some places say you can, okay, but it's up to the limit of the blood alcohol content. But the point is that it could be different in Michigan than Indiana, than Illinois, than Iowa, certainly different than California and Oregon, and a lot of East Coast states. So that's why you need to start thinking about, now, what are you going to do if you're carrying your firearm and now you go, hey, well, we want to go into Canada. Uh-oh, what am I going to do now? Okay, well, we even talked about this. I said, it could very well be that you are going to go into Canada for a week and you've got a firearm with you. Now, you actually can carry, or not carry, but take a firearm with you, specifically long guns, into Canada. Okay, there's a temporary permit that you can get. Now, I don't know how far ahead you have to sign up for that. But the thing is that there's a temporary firearms permit that allows you to have, especially if you're going camping in, way up in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, and you're a little worried about bears and things like that, well, then you are allowed to have a firearm in your trailer and stuff. You also got to make sure you have the right paperwork to bring it back into the United States because you cannot just pull up and go, anything to declare, yeah, I got my shotguns in the back, you know. Whoa, wait a minute, okay? Pull over here, sir. So you've got to plan ahead. I was even suggesting, I bet you that there are gun stores, not ones that would store your firearm for you because they're taking possession and stuff, although it may be, that might be a good business, you know, but on the near the border, and if you stopped and you said, hey, you know, I would like to have my firearm professionally cleaned by your gunsmith here, okay? Do an outstanding deep clean. Take it down completely, ultrasonic cleaning on blah, 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 and do a good job on this and maybe touch up that bluing on the barrel a little bit or something like that. And you leave it and you go, okay, I'll leave it with you. I'll be back in a week or so or 2 weeks whenever you think this will be ready. And you leave it in the United States and then you go over to Canada. I am sure there are workarounds like that, legal workarounds like that. Don't think, well, there's so many places to hide guns in a Airstream, little cubbies under the bed, all sorts of things. I said, no, you don't want to do that because what'll happen is you can, who knows, you might be going into California and you're thinking, they'll never find that gun. And so they're doing a drug search on people, just a stopping, doing drug search or something, and the dog will hit on it because the dogs often are cross-trained in drugs and firearms or explosives. So they'll smell the firearms, powder residue and stuff like that. So I want to say, you got to follow the rules. You got to know the rules and you've got to abide by the rules. That's why we're called the law abiding, citizens. Now you may decide that you think that, well, the Constitution's my right to carry an arm wherever I want, damn it. Okay. Well, not so much. There are some laws, and if you want to test that, you may be forfeiting your firearm and spending a lot of time going back into that state to try to get that gun back again. Okay? That's another reason to not... I get a kick. Scott, he was like, oh, man, what I'd really like to get is that Wilson Combat 1911 I saw. But, oh, man, that's like, $3,000 or something. I go, I know it is. It's like that would be your first pistol, a $3,000 Wilson Combat? No. You want to spend, $4,500 to $700 on a utilitarian Glock, Sig, Ruger, whatever. And by the way, they are the kind of thing that if you do have something that happens, it's replaceable. It's not a $3,000 or a $5,000 super heirloom or something like that. They're tools in the case of you using it as a home defense gun in your Airstream or whatever. You don't need the best. You need the most functional and most reliable, but you don't need these really, really fancy guns for those kind of things. So at any rate, that was a long discussion to talk about over lots of amounts of coffee. The woman kept coming back and, you want more coffee? Yeah. Gave her a big tip because we sat there for an hour and a half after breakfast. And there's going to be more discussions after that because there's a lot of things that he needs to consider. His eyes are opening up. We're talking about the training that he needs to take and about, he was talking about, I like the idea of the red dot on the pistol. And I said, yes, but it makes them less concealable. You have to turn them on unless it's got an auto on feature. It's things that if you are needing your firearm, you need it now. You don't need to be remembering, especially on a brand new gun that you've hardly ever shot. I got to turn this off. I have to turn this on. No. Okay. It's got to go bang. And so you don't need all the bells and whistles and stuff in that kind of situation. We went through a long discussion on point shooting where you're not even using your sights, where you are able to group rounds together, six rounds together in like a 3-inch circle without even looking at the gun, okay? You're looking at the target, you're pointing, and you are pulling the trigger. You're not even looking at the gun and the sights, okay? And those are all things that are much more important, and the training that it takes to get that, much more important than spending $3,000 on a Wilson Combat 1911, okay? So... it's just something to think about. Let's see. I was reading about, again, election time, people talking about what's going on. Well, here's a mayor of Richmond, Virginia. And he is going to have, and this is a big controversy there, because he actually is being asked to implement something called Project Exile. Interesting. What's Project Exile? Well, it's one of these tough-on-crime kind of things that they did, where in what they did, Project Exile is a crime-fighting strategy that utilizes the federal court system to prosecute violent felons caught illegally possessing firearms. And it's got a great track record around the country when it comes to reducing violent crime. In fact, the first Project Exile program took place in Richmond, Virginia in the late 1990s. And within a year of its implementation, homicides had declined 40%. So when you're talking about what can you do to reduce gun crime, you don't need more gun laws. You need to enforce the ones you've got. And here's examples that are telling you that, okay? Murders in Richmond now are on the upswing, and 2021's total was the highest in more than 20 years. But rather than rebooting Project Exile, Richard Mayor LeVar Stoney is choosing to spend $500,000 on a gun buyback program to fight crime instead. The mayor's office did release a statement on reviving Project Exile, saying, "Project Exile was a success in the 90s, but since that time, we've learned how to implement other effective strategies." Really? Is that why the homicides are going up and up and crime is going up? "We believe that investing in a holistic approach to caring for our community, including gun violence prevention programs that provide wraparound support services." What? Okay, you know what's going to stop the guns? It's going to be like a thing where, like stop and frisk and stuff, where you're able to, if you have reason to believe that somebody may be armed, that you can check him. And by the way, if he is carrying, you don't release him with no bail, because he'll come back and talk about it when you want to. No, you arrest him and throw his butt in jail, okay? And you have real consequences, okay? So they want to have a gun violence program that provides wraparound support services, community intervention, trusted messengers, and initiatives like our gun buyback program, which can make a significant impact in preventing violence and making our neighborhood safer again. Except that there are zero studies showing that buybacks actually reduce gun crimes. By the way, you know what happens? I'm sure that they'll end up with, 100 guns or something like that. And you'll see everything from old muzzle loaders and .22 rifles to find things where they've got old single action. You might find an old Colt or something. Might be worth $5,000-$10,000 because it was from Grandpa's collection and nobody knew anything about it. Okay, and it's not the kind of gun that is going to be out there in gang crimes and drug crimes and things like that. So what they don't want to do is they don't want to do anything that supports more policing, more following of laws, more responsibility, more accountability for it. Nope, that's not, that's something that they can't do. Media Democrat Shannon Watts gins up fake outrage over Jim LeMond's violent Arizona campaign ad. It's actually funny. Look it up, Jim LeMond, LAMONS. And he has a Senate campaign ad that apparently is going to be a commercial for the Super Bowl. And it's like him being the new sheriff in town. And he is getting ready to throw out the bad guys. And the three bad guys come and they've got, a shotgun and a knife and a pistol. And he stands up to them and he shoots the guns out of their hands, And the anti-gun crowd's like, "Oh, my God, they're glorifying violence and blah, blah." Okay, lighten up a little bit. Do you ever watch Gunsmoke? Do you ever watch Rifleman? Do you ever watch Have Gun, Will Travel? Lighten up a little bit, folks. Not everything is literal. Now, if you want to show a picture of Alec Baldwin shooting the producer, that might be over the top for this, okay? But this one's a little tongue-in-cheek, and it's fun. Lighten up, people. So at any rate, there's another thing about Shannon Watts I'll have to find in the second half and give you a little insight into her thoughts lately. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600 in Ann Arbor, Michigan. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
And welcome back to the second hour of Trigger Talk here on Super Bowl weekend. And so are you getting into that? We used to do that. We used to have like chili parties and stuff like that. Nowadays we don't anymore. But I'm actually all hyped up because of Matthew Stafford. I think I'm excited for him. It's good to see so many people in Michigan that are supportive of him. I know people are like, he shouldn't have left, you know, and stuff like that. But it does show that he had the talent there. And when you got the right people around him, he's doing pretty darn well. So I'd like to know, are you guys supporting Matthew Stafford? How about you, Derek?
Oh, I'm definitely supporting him tomorrow in the Super Bowl, but it's going to be a tough game going up against Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals. That Burrow kid, he's got a great swagger to him. He might seem cocky, but he's just really confident in his ability, and he's certainly shown it this year.
Yeah, and I want to say, like 2 years ago, they were the number one draft pick, weren't they? I mean, they were pretty bad, and here they are in the Super Bowl. So there is hope for our Lions, right?
Yeah, we Lions fans could only hope that it's going to turn around at some point. I mean, yeah, there was some progression in the right direction this past year with Dan Campbell as the head coach, but only time will tell.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I still think I'm subscribing to what Derek told me, and he believes in the Bobby Lane curse, okay? So I want to say that I think we should do an exorcism or something of the Bobby Lane curse and then watch and see if that makes a difference. So let's see. So I was going to start talking about Shannon Watts, okay? Shannon Watts is is the head of Moms Against Everything. she is the director of, let's see, they changed some of their names and stuff, but a group called Moms Demanding Action for Gun Sense in America. They keep adding and subtracting to it, but she was commenting about that movie or that ad where Lamont out in Arizona she's just disgusted that they would have him shooting the weapons out of the hands of the bad guys and stuff. And, you know, it's only been 10 years since Gabby Giffords. You know what? It's been 10 years from a lot of things. 7 years, 6 years, 5 years. You know what? It's been a lot of years since the Second Amendment was written, and you guys are talking about that all the time, okay? So let's and by the way, she was talking about gun owners. Do you know why we are against moms demanding action? Apparently, we as gun owners hate women. It's because they're a bunch of moms, and we just hate the moms, okay? I want to say, have you ever seen not only gun owners, but gun owners and how much they enjoy the time they spend with their spouses shooting and by the way, when you go to a gun show, they don't have women that look like the Democratic women at the gun show. Like that's like going to the car show, and they wouldn't have Hillary Clinton up there as a model for a Tesla or something like that. No, we love women. They look nice. Okay, we like them. They look nice with guns too. Okay, so knock it off. You are changing the narrative now. Now the gun owners they just hate women. That's why we're against them wanting to have more gun control. Oh, gosh. Change the narrative. Let's see. Lawsuit shows Georgia's shall issue carry law isn't as shall as you may think. By the way, I was also talking to my friend Scott about that when we were talking about getting a CPL. And by the way, he also was talking about, that pistol, that rifle, then you can get it with a threaded barrel and a suppressor on that too, and that'll be so cool. I said, whoa, do you know that each one of those suppressors is going to cost you a $200 tax stamp, and it's going to take you theoretically 3, 4, 6 months to get it, because you have to have some paperwork signed by the chief law enforcement officer of your area and stuff like that. I got to say, it's interesting when you talk to somebody who thinks they know just enough about guns to be dangerous, because back 40 years ago, he had a shotgun that he shot one time or something. You know what I mean? That kind of guy. And they don't even understand, oh, yeah, the suppressors, that would be so cool. And, okay, well, they're going to cost you $400 plus $200 for a tax stamp, take you months to get. There are companies out there. I'm going to look into this one. It's not Silencer Co. It's another company that actually, and this, the word silencer is in their name, and I look it up, and I remember reading it, so I'll find and talk about it next week. But there's a company that if you decide that you want one of their silencer or suppressor products, they don't really silence anything, they just suppress the noise. They actually handle all the transactions, the applying for the NFA licenses, all that kind of stuff for you. So it's like a one-stop shopping, so you're not running around doing that stuff. I think that is a neat service, so I'll have to look into that. Suppressors are a big deal. I know people that have them, enjoy them. I don't have any suppressors. Maybe I'll get one someday for a .22 or something like that, to be able to plink less obtrusively. But at any rate, do you have suppressors? Do you have a gun trust where you some people put the suppressors in a trust, and then they're owned by multiple, like you and your father and your son and your grandfather, and then whoever uses it is legal to use it, not just the person that has the tax stamp on it. So that's kind of a neat way to be able to do it. But I was talking to him about that and talked to him about his CPL. And I said, well, fortunately, we are a shall issue state. And I said, there's a big difference between a shall issue and a may issue state. Because a shall issue says the state shall issue a CPL unless there's a compelling reason not to. Okay, so you are a felon, okay? Can't get a CPL. You can't have a gun anyway. You're not supposed to own any guns after you've been convicted of a felony. But let's say that, you have a DWI, you've got a, domestic abuse charge or something like that. That is a reason that you may not be able to get a CPL. Okay. That's a legitimate reason that you're not able to get one. I also said there might be another guy, in the same township that's got a name that is similar to yours, and when they do the NICS check and stuff like that, that even may come back and say you can't even have a gun. So sometimes the paperwork takes a while for them to figure out, if you can have a gun or if you can have a CPL, because there could be, they actually do research into that. But shall issue says they've got to have a reason not to. May issue means maybe we will, maybe we won't, okay? And that's been, in a lot of areas, what happens is, matter of fact, there's a lawsuit out in Los Angeles where the sheriff out there was kind of shaking people down that you want a CPL? Well, you might need to donate to my campaign fund, okay? You might need to contribute, and this was to the Apple security staff. They said that you might need to donate like 700 iPads to the school system or something. I mean, it's a shakedown, okay? That's what happens when you have a may issue system, okay? And pretty soon they do it because people want to have, they want something and they're willing to pay for it. And there are people paying $70,000, $100,000 for the privilege of getting a CPL out in Los Angeles, okay? And now that official is in deep trouble, and along with their staff who played along with it, okay? Well, apparently in Georgia they're doing that too. And so I want to say you've got to plan for all of this stuff when you are planning to do a lifestyle change. You're going to go on the road. It's all not going to happen just boom, 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 boom. And he goes, well, is there a waiting period and stuff? I said, no, not in Michigan. There are in some states, like in, I think Illinois has got a 3-day waiting period. Other states have 10-day waiting periods, a couple of them. Michigan has the pistol registration, which is one of the 8 states that do. Okay. So that, normally is not a problem. When you go to buy the handgun nowadays in the at the store, if they're a dealer, they will be able to handle the paperwork for you. You'll still have to go register it at the local Washtenaw County Sheriff's Office or Wayne County Sheriff, or maybe it might be the Township Police Office, something like that. Whoever is the governing police body for that, you have to take the firearm in, or no, I'm sorry, you have to take the paperwork in. You don't need to take the firearm in anymore. They used to do a thing, some of you guys are old enough to remember when they would do a thing called a function check, a safety check, where theoretically you brought the firearm in and they would check it. Some places took that seriously. I forget the name of the guy. It was a sergeant, Sergeant Ballard or something like that at Pittsfield Township. And I used to deal with him because he was also their police fleet guy, and I was the chief on police cars at the time. And he actually took it serious. He'd take the gun apart and check to make sure that there wasn't wear and things like that on it. But let's see. I'm just looking to see. Oh, there we go. We have got Cliff from Commerce on a handgun with little recoil. Hi, Cliff. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm doing great. Doing great. What's your question on a firearm with little recoil?
I've got a wrist injury that's apparently never going to go away, and I'm looking for a handgun that won't give a lot of strain on that. I will be able to shoot, but I just don't want a lot of strain on it, especially if I'm at the range and I'm going to shoot multiple rounds.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, that's a toughie, okay, because it's all physics, right? You've got energy, you've got a projectile going down the barrel, you have a opposite reaction pushing back on the gun, right?
Right.
And essentially, and by the way, the other thing is that nowadays they've made guns that are lighter and polymer, so they don't soak up the recoil as much, and it transmits more of it into your hand. It also is important to make sure that you're holding the gun correctly. This is why when you hold the firearm, you're talking you right-handed? Let's just say.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
yeah.
Say if you're holding that gun in your hand, and you want to make sure that the gun is the size of the gun and the grip is correct, so that as you're looking down on your arm, and let's say you're holding that gun in your hand, that the gun aligns with your wrist and with your arm, and that you are not having to reach farther around to get your finger in the trigger, so that the gun is pushing more against your thumb than it is into your wrist. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so a couple of things. First of all, the selection of the round will be important, but do you want a semi-automatic or do you want a revolver?
Semi-auto.
Okay, that's good, because most semi-autos, the mere functioning of the gun helps soak up some of that recoil. Okay.
All right.
The other thing is that if you are going to pick a round in 9mm, which is a fairly stout round. I mean, it's got a snappy performance, but it's not like a 44 mag or, you know, or a 10 millimeter or something that's very, very known to be recoil sensitive. And you can't actually get lighter loads in 9 millimeters. But when you pick the gun, you want to pick one that's got some heft to it. I assume that the weight of the gun is not a problem.
No, it's not.
Okay, it's just the pulse into your, is it your wrist or your thumb or your joints?
It is the wrist.
Okay,
yes.
Okay. I want to say there are a couple interesting choices out there. First of all, a lot of people say that you should not have a firearm that's less than like a 380. A 380 may seem like a light gun or a light recoiling gun, but the fact is that it has a very snappy pulse, and because most 380s are tiny, they really transmit a lot of that pulse into your hand, okay? There are some exceptions to that. There are guns out there now, like a Smith & Wesson M&P, let's see, it's the, wait a minute, let's see which one it is. It's the Plus, and it's the, wait a minute, I've got it right here because I was going to look at it. Anyway, it's the one that is easier to cock, and it also, if you get it in the 380 version, then it's a lighter pulsed round than a 9mm in a the same gun as a 9mm, so it helps soak up the, there we go. It's the Smith & Wesson M&P Shield Plus, okay?
Okay.
And what happens is and it's called an EZ is at the end of it. And that's that they've kind of designed it so that it makes it also easier to rack the slide. So I don't know if that's a problem for you, but it if you've got wrist problems, it also could be a problem holding the gun to cock it. Okay.
Right.
And if you get the 380 in the larger frame like that, it will help soak up that pulse. I want to say there are some others that are 380s that are, there's a Ruger Max and things. Sometimes the thing is that having extra ammo actually helps because it helps dampen the mass helps dampen the pulse as well. But you might even consider, have you heard of the Ruger 5.7?
No, I have not.
Okay. It's a good self-defense round. It is a centerfire bottleneck round. It's in 5.7 caliber, and it's the same round that, which was it? The, FNH, 5.7. It's the PS90 uses it and stuff. It looks like a mini 223 round. Are you familiar with 223?
No, I bought my first gun a little while ago, and then had the wrist injury, and so I'm just getting into this.
Okay.
So I have not even, I got a whole lot of nines sitting here, but I have a gun, but I don't have the ability, I don't think, to really do a lot of practice with
it. Yeah. If you've got a wrist injury, you might be looking at something that is lighter pulsed. I'll tell you one thing you should have absolutely for time at the range would be a good .22 pistol. Okay. And there is an outstanding one out there that is a small, it's called a Ruger LCP Light Rack. LiteRack, Light Rack. And okay. And what it is it's essentially what would normally be a small carry gun sized gun, but it's in .22 long rifle. Okay. Now .22 long rifle is actually, it's better than a sharp stick in the eye, okay? So it's not the premier self-defense round, but there is ammo out there that makes it a viable self-defense gun. And it's something you can shoot at the range all day, and it's not going to affect your wrist.
Good to know. Okay.
Okay, but I started to talk about the Ruger 5.7. And it is it holds, I think, 20 rounds. I mean, it is a small Don't underestimate it. It's a small, high-velocity round that has almost no recoil. They've been out for about 2 years now. The actual ammunition's been out for 15 years, and there was only one gun that it worked in, and so it was not real popular. Now, all of a sudden, Taurus, Ruger, other companies are making pistols for this 5.7. It's called a 5.7 by 28 is the ammo.
All right.
Okay, and you look that up, and you'll see that there's more being built now for those. Now, it's not a cheap gun. It's like $600 or $700, okay? But it would be an outstanding gun that you could shoot, and you could shoot it all day at the range, although the ammo's not. It's about the same cost as a 9mm, but it has far less recoil.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that.
So look into that. I'd like to call back and let me know if you got any other questions. A 380 in a full-size gun would maybe work for you. So that's like that M&P Shield 380, easy, okay?
Okay.
Or a 5.7. Another one might be Kel-Tec. I don't know if – are you a gun snob? Probably not. You're just starting.
No, but I've heard of Kel-Tec a lot. I listen to Dana and others.
Okay, so. Yeah, Kel-Tec has one called a PMR-30, and it fires the 22 Magnum round. And actually, I was just reading a story. I was going to talk about 22 Magnums today. A 22 Magnum is a 40-grain bullet at like 1,500 feet per second out of a pistol. It's got a plenty of energy and, again, very, very light recoil. So if you're not one of these guys that, you know, you've got to have a Glock or something like that, then you should consider some of these others, like the Ruger 5.7 or the Kel-Tec PMR-30.
All right. I appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Dick.
Oh, yep, you're very welcome. And I check back in when you get one, and I'd like to know how. Matter of fact, I here's what I would do, too. Where are you located again?
Commerce,
okay. You should go to, and I don't know, there's a new, you know that new Hudson Huron Guns or something out there? There's a big store. I think they have a range as well. Most gun stores that have ranges will actually have rental guns. So what you could do is you could go, I know Westland does this, Firing Line in Westland has rental guns, and I know that Ann Arbor Arms has rental guns. And so you could go and you could pick one of these lighter caliber guns and fire it and see if it works before you make the mistake of buying it. Okay?
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I've used a rental gun a couple of times before I actually bought one, so.
What nine did you get in the first place?
One I'm not real thrilled with so far, but it might be more me than the gun. It's the Glock 43.
Oh, well, that it's probably you because the gun's pretty reasonable. So
Yeah, I thought so, I think.
Yeah.
But I did take one class, and I did not get a lot out of it. The stuff they promised was not what they delivered on. So
where'd you go?
I'd rather not say over the air.
Oh, okay. Okay. Although that's okay because if they, you know, this community, the gun community likes to know, you know, who's delivering on their promises and who's not. So it's up to you. But the Glock 43 should be a decent gun. That's a single stack, nine and, but it's very light. And so that's why you're getting a lot of recoil transmission.
Yeah. And like I said, I bought that before I actually had the full wrist injury here. So, I wasn't having that much of a problem, with the pain.
Okay.
With that one. But I re-injured that wrist, and it's going to stay that way.
Oh, geez. Okay. Well, good luck to you. Let us know how it works out, okay?
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. Oh, music's playing. It's going to be the bottom of the hour. We got a couple of people online. Jim, you're online. We're going to get to you when we get back, okay? This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Wham! Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
And we're back. And first, I'd like to thank the listener that called in. And yes, this is the one I was thinking of, Silencer Central. SilencerCentral.com is, and their big thing is, the silencers you want delivered right to your door, we handle the paperwork. So SilencerCentral.com. They've got all sorts of them that range from $300 to thousands. So take a look and see. They have rimfire and, big rifle ones and stuff like that. So we have got, Jim from Chelsea with suggestions about a pistol with light recoil. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Dick. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. What's your suggestion there?
Okay, two suggestions. One, back when I had a CZ-97D that I used to use way back when on the firing lines fun leagues, I put in a stronger recoil spring. And I had guys say that was the lightest shooting 45 that they've ever shot. So it'll help. Will it help enough? Not sure.
Yep.
And the other thing is barrel porting. I have a MP Performance that has a ported barrel. That's the way it comes. And that reduces the kickback somewhat. So that's something else to consider. And
that is interesting. And I had not thought about that. But there's actually a company right here in Michigan called Magnaport that typically can port existing guns. You can send them the slide and the barrel, and they can port it.
Yeah, I've had friends back when we used to go out of country bird shooting that had their shotguns ported, and they sounded weird, but they had a real light recoil.
Yeah, good ideas, and you're right about the other thing I was thinking about, too, is that, like, I have a 9mm that is called a Smith & Wesson 5906, okay? It's a big, heavy, emphasis on heavy, stainless steel 15-round mag duty firearm that is so heavy, I like to shoot it with 9mm because it almost feels like you're shooting a 22. I mean, it's so heavy, it soaks up all the recoil, you know what I mean? So
yeah, the 97B CZ was all steel, and that's the reason I stopped carrying it. It was just too damn heavy.
Yeah, but for time at the range or something, it could be a good, for somebody who wants to shoot, that is an option too, is find themselves a big old heavy-ass 9mm, right?
That's it.
Well, thanks, Jim. And you know, the idea of the Magna porting is good because it does two things. One is the gases are directed forward to kind of help with the recoil, but also they typically deflect up, so that means it pushes the barrel down, so your follow-up shots are better, too.
Yeah, that's the way it is on my pistol.
Yep. Very good idea. So, and like I said, okay. Magnaport, I don't know if they've got something for a program to do for the Glock 43, which is what the listener was shooting, but that is an awful light. I mean, that's meant to be a tiny, small 9mm single stack gun, and those are very light, and it's hard to dampen anything in those very light Glocks like that.
You got it.
Yep. Hey, thanks for the call, Jim.
You're welcome. Okay. See you next time.
Yep. Bye-bye. Let's see. So, again, Silencer Central is the name of that silencer company. Good ideas from Jim on Magnaporting. I think you got to start over to the listener that called in, because that Glock 43 is a great gun, but it is going to always have recoil. Now, the good thing is that if you are carrying it and you are actually having to use it, you probably won't even feel the recoil because of your adrenaline flowing. So what you're looking for is something to train with and to shoot at the ranges and stuff like that. Probably you could still use that 43 if you wanted, but I would say it'd be better to get something that you are more comfortable with and you can train with it and carry it. Like that shield, that 380 shield. They also have, I think, and that's the one that's the EZ. It's also easier to load the mags and easier to cock, and it's just and it's just supposed to be a nice soft shooting gun. One of the guns that I was just thinking about that is not really out yet. It's announced. It's a new round called 30 carry. And everybody is always trying to hit the sweet spot with these firearms, okay? Well, a 9mm is technically a .355 diameter bullet, so it's technically the same as a 38, okay? So you might decide that you wanted to shoot a revolver, okay? And there are 38 rounds that are soft that you could shoot. Although the revolvers don't have any mechanism that built in and act like a buffer, but you can get decent grips, like a Hogue grip or something that helps spread out that the butt in your hand so that it's spread across a bigger area. And there are some rounds that are like in-between rounds that they've come out with for both revolvers and semi-automatics. This new one for semi-automatics is called 30 carry, and it's a 30 caliber, which makes it less diameter than a 9mm or a 38, so that you can get more rounds in the mag, blah, blah, blah. But also, it's supposed to have significantly less recoil than a 9mm. The problem is, and I'd recommend that in a heartbeat probably, but it's a new round. It's going to be a while before you see much of it in the stores, and it'll be a while before, I think there's only one gun company that's actually making it right now. So it takes, when somebody introduces something new, it's kind of a crapshoot. Is this going to take off or is it not going to take off? So there's the 30 Super Carry. Okay. The other one is in revolvers, and they call it a 327 Federal. Okay. And what it is that it is meant to have similar ballistic or energy capabilities to a 357 Magnum, but far less recoil. Again, it's in a revolver, and most revolvers, if you're going to have a small revolver, like I carry a Ruger SP-101 in 357 Magnum, but if I was carrying it with a 38 special round, which would be very adequate, okay, it weighs 26 ounces empty, so it's a stainless steel gun, and it helps soak up the recoil. So there's little mitigation things you can do no matter what you're shooting. Maybe you get a light load for a lightly loaded 9, okay? They do make ones for people that are recoil sensitive, okay? Maybe it's an odd round like the new Super Carry or the 327 Federal. You get it in a heavy gun, man, you're cooking with gas then, okay? So there's different strategies that you can use. And sometimes people come out with a new round and everybody thinks it's going to be the greatest thing, like 357 SIG, let's say, and then they kind of fade off into the history, and they still make them, but nobody really owns, you know, shoots them and blah, 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 you know. So maybe you're a 357 SIG fan and you've got thousands of rounds on it. Good for you. What that is, a 357 SIG is a 40 Smith & Wesson necked down to a 9mm round, so it's got a larger capacity for the size bullet, so it replicates a 357 Magnum. But that that's going for performance, not necessarily low recoil or anything. There are things that can people put buffers on guns. You can change. And Jim from Chelsea mentioned that he changed a recoil spring on a gun and it made a big difference. There's a lot of little fine tuning you can do. But if you are a new gun owner, you're better off probably not, you know, monkeying around with the dynamics of this spring and that spring and a buffer and stuff like that, because you may come up with something that's unreliable. So let's see. Let me go back to where I was. I was looking at the truth about guns. I like that website. And I was looking at a lot of different stories in it. One of the ones I get a kick out of is that's making a lot of noise is that SCCY. But again, and they call it Sky, I think. And there's a DVG-1 striker-fired 9mm. I looked at it when I was up at the show last week up at Mason. And they're decent guns. I mean, they are inexpensive guns. You can get them for $249, and if you get it, they actually have ones that are around $300 with a red dot on them. I mean, it's $300, $349, something like that. Pretty good deals, but again, they're a lot of power in a small package, and it's not going to be good for the recoil standpoint. It's mainly a firepower piece, okay? So Truth About Guns had... It's interesting when you look at these lists about different guns, and it'll say the most popular gun reviews. Well, that could be any number of things, okay? It could be the most popular because it's got the most clicks on it. Is it the most popular because that's the one that people bought the most of? Maybe it's got something funny about it. You know, maybe there's a... something unique about it, and so a lot of people are looking at it. Maybe it's super decent price, so you got a lot of people looking at it. So you got to kind of figure out what does most popular gun review mean. And when I look here, I'm thinking it's probably newness, price, and I want to say maybe, extra capacity type of things. The first one that they, number five, was their Taurus G2C. I think that's because of cost. I think that the Tauruses, which are currently in an upswing, the Taurus guns had a checkered past. It had a time when they were made in Brazil. Some are still made in Brazil. Some are made in Florida. But they've really upgraded their manufacturing, and they have a number of decent, like a G2C, a G3C, different size guns in 9mm. They've become a very price-effective gun. This one here is because of the new... extra rounds in it. This is called the LCP. This is gun number 4, and as far as the most popular guns of 2021 or reviews, the Ruger LCP Max 10+1 380. Now, I am carrying in my pocket an LCP right now in 380, but I only have a 6+1. The 10+1 is no bigger, and it's got a little bit bigger, but it's got a staggered magazine. It holds 10 rounds, so it would help a little bit with the recoil because it's got extra weight in the extra 4 rounds in there. But in general, it's an extremely light gun that's going to have a lot of recoil. Okay, but it's a lot of people are like they didn't like these little pocket 380s and stuff because they only carried 6 rounds. And that's true. I always have 12 with me. I've got, well, 13. I have 6+1 in the gun and a spare mag. So, but I'd have to change the mag. Whereas if you can get 10, 12, 13 rounds in one mag, you may not even need to carry a spare mag, although I think it's always a good idea. Number three, gun review. This has got to be purely price, but also just nostalgia. Number three is the Heritage Rough Rider pistol. And Heritage is, and I've mentioned them a couple of times, Heritage is one of the companies that is making single-action pistols, similar to like when Ruger first started making the single six many, many years ago. And then also nowadays they make the Ruger Wrangler. And the Wrangler is their low-priced one now. Well, their low-priced one is now like $179 to $199 for the Ruger. That's fine, but now there's a new sheriff in town when it comes to low-priced single-action revolvers, and that is Heritage. They seem to be of decent quality. They have a lot of variety. They make ones called the Barkeep, they make the Rough Rider, and these are like $129. I've seen them as low as $119, okay? And and by the way, you can also then for another $50, you can get a conversion cylinder and just swap the cylinder out and be able to shoot 22 Magnum. What could be better for your money than that? So that's the Heritage Rough Rider. That was their number three gun review. Now, this one makes me, again, laugh because it's got to be value and money because it's certainly not reputation or anything. This their number two gun review for Truth About Guns for 2021 is called a Tissas Zagana PX9. It's a one of these 9mm that is kind of a generic-looking 9, looks kind of like a Glock married a Springfield XD married a Sig Sauer, okay? And it has, it's made in Turkey. Okay, Turkish firearms have long been popular, lower cost options for a lot of people. I know that to be true because I know people that have bought the Turkish guns. I know there are ones that are very good, but they're not necessarily a lot cheaper, like the Canik TPE-9 and things like that. They're outstanding guns. This one I've never heard of before. So I guess the company was founded in 1993, so it's been around 30 years. So you got to think, well, that's got some longevity. It's not a flash in the pan. But this was their number two most popular review was a Tissas, T-I-S-A-S, Z-I-G-A-N-A PX9. So it looks like a decent pistol, but I would not, I suppose it has 30 years on it, or the company does, but I don't know if this pistol has got the reliability yet. And then number one gun that was their number one gun review was the Smith & Wesson M&P 9 Shield Plus. And that's the 2.0 flavor, I guess. The point is that they some of the big names and the enhancements that they continue to do, which is things like let's see if I can pull that up. Nope. The enhancements on the Shield Plus and on the Shield EZ are what are drawing people to them. They are carrying more in the way of ammunition. They're popularly priced. They feel good in your hands. And especially the ones when they came out with the EZ for the 380 and the EZ for the 9mm, they really hit the market. Just like our listener today was calling where he's got a wrist injury. And it could be an injury. It could be genetic. It could be you've got arthritis. You could be that you've got gout. You could got who knows what you got, or you could have a injury, and you know whether you an injury from work, a carpal tunnel kind of thing, or if you know there's a what is it they call it the medicine community has an acronym falling forward and putting your hands out, okay? That's this time of year. They see a ton of emergency room visits and injuries, and this would affect gun people because what happens is people slip, and they fall forward, and they put their hands out in front of them. And what do? They fall on the ground, and they jam their wrists or injured their wrists, and then they have problems like the listener who could not, who has wrist pain, okay? So you just, you need to be careful, but there are ways around it. If you do have that kind of injury and you need to fire something with less recoil. Okay, let's see. So the other one I was going to talk about, and this was a review that came out just 2 weeks ago. I think they just announced it. And Henry Lever Action Magnum Express Rifle bridges the gap between a plinker and self-defense. Well, what it is it's a lever action 22 Magnum. I love lever actions, and I love 22 Magnums. And so this is... let's see. We've got Phil from Detroit on revolvers. Hi, Phil. How are you today?
Howdy. Doing pretty good. Getting over a lousy flu. Another lousy flu.
Oh, no. Okay.
And you mentioned Heritage, and a friend of mine won one in a raffle about 20 years ago. He brought it by, and we played with it. And it was a nice little, you know, Frontier-style 22 six-gun. And as I recall, it had a die-cast pot metal frame. Not that necessarily a bad thing, but it's a cheaper-made gun.
Well, I think that, and I'm not sure that they're die-cast now, but because that could be 20-year-old version versus the current version, you know, with manufacturing. But obviously, they've done something to make it a lower-priced gun, and that usually is in the manufacturing process.
Yeah, that's probably it. That'd save big time.
Yep. But, and I've got some guns that are kind of like that. I've
got something called an Arminius.
Arminius.
You ever heard of that one?
No, I haven't.
Look it up, okay? Look up Arminius.
Okay.
And
the pot metal kind of cast frame guns got a bad rap in the 60s and 70s because there were so many of them made cheaply. And cheap revolvers from Europe and stuff like that, that they got a bad rap. But the actual manufacturing of the metal, and nowadays if they're machined correctly and stuff like that, I'm sure that they're better. And these Heritages seem to be a good value.
It seems like what it is on that Arminius is it's a .38.
Okay.
Nice look. It looks like a Smith & Wesson or something like that. It's a German-made. But anyhow, it was the blast from in the area between the cylinder and the barrel was actually etching away at the top of the frame.
Well, you know, that is not just on that gun. There are, and they call it strapware. And if you are firing a very hot gun, like a 44 Magnum or a 460 Mag or something like that, many times they actually put a stainless steel piece up there to help deflect it. Otherwise,
I put a piece of sheet metal in it.
There you go.
To keep it from rotting any further.
Yep. So that's a very interesting observation.
Oh, and the problem was the sheet metal, as thin as it was, interferes with the cylinder rotation. So I had to polish the cylinder down to clear it.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, you're an amazing guy. You find your own solutions there. So thanks for the call today.
Phil,
I appreciate
Fitch
it.
And Phil.
That's very good. Thanks for the call. So anyway, this has been fun. We've had lots of discussions. Next week, I'm going to talk about the molybdenum sting. I had a question about that last week, and I didn't have time to get it because it's a bigger topic than I thought. So we'll talk about that next week. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio at WAM Talk 1600. Have a nice weekend.